Well, yes, I'm very happy to talk to you about this topic today. It's definitely something that is becoming more and more important in the society because of the increase of obesity. And I think I told you, to some of you already, about something related with this in the lecture I gave on like a month ago, more or less. But this is an extended version of that, and I will go into what is prostate cancer. I'm not going to explain what is obesity, because I know with obesity seminars every week you already know what obesity is, so I thought that was not needed. We will see the incidence of prostate cancer. We will look into the what we know about the relationship between obesity and prostate cancer, and I will show you the results we have in our group so far. And I will talk about possible mechanisms and about the future work that we are going to do to try to establish whether the association is causal. So let's start with prostate cancer. There are over 40,000 prostate cancer cases diagnosed every year in this country, but today we don't know what to tell men that want to decrease their prostate cancer risk. The risk factors and the etiology of prostate cancer is not very well understood, and it's difficult to identify modifiable risk factors for prostate cancer because diagnosis is highly influenced by prostate-specific antigen testing, PSA. So this test was introduced in the 90s all over the world, especially in developed countries. And basically, when this molecule is high in the blood, is a sign that the prostate may have a tumor. So the problem we have with PSA testing is that there has been a lot of overdiagnosis. When men reach a certain age, 70, 80 years of age, many of them may have prostate cancer, but this doesn't mean that the tumor is going to kill them. The problem of this test is that it doesn't differentiate between aggressive and non-aggressive tumors, and we have seen a massive increase in prostate cancer incidence in developed countries because of the introduction of this test. But it doesn't mean that actually the development of prostate cancer tumors have actually increased. It's just the diagnosis of the tumors what has increased. And so this test is also highly correlated with lifestyle factors. So for example, it's more likely for men who are married to go to the doctor and have a PSA test. Because imagine, for example, the men waking up at night to go to the toilet, the wife telling them, you have to go to the doctor, this is not. You wake me up every night, so I want you to check this out, you know? Or also, health-conscious men are also more likely to go to the GP and have a PSA test. So it's highly confounded who gets a PSA test or not, because now, for example, in this country, there is not a program that advises men at a certain age to have a PSA test. So it's basically, if you go to the GP and ask for it, you may have it. But if not, it's not something like with breast cancer screening, for example, that you receive a letter at home to enter in the screening program. For PSA, it's different. So it really varies by socioeconomic status, lifestyle, and so on. And what we know so far about prostate cancer, the established risk factors are family history, some genetic variants that we know they have been associated with risk, race and ethnicity. We know so far that, for example, men from black ethnicity have a higher risk of developing prostate cancer and actually have quite aggressive tumors. And men from Asian ethnicity have a lower risk if we compare them with men from white ethnicity. And age, as every cancer, the risk of developing cancer increase with age. And there are some possible risk factors that have been suggested, but the evidence is not so certain today. And some of them are some hormones, such as insulin growth factor 1, of which I will talk about later, and testosterone. Height, men who are taller have a higher risk of developing prostate cancer, and this may be related with higher risk of insulin growth factor 1. So it's a growth hormone, and it's highly related with the growth hormone. And that's why it's not that height per se increases the risk of prostate cancer. It's actually what is behind being taller, and that's higher values of growth hormones. Adiposity, that is what I mainly will talk about you today. We don't know for sure whether it's a risk factor or not yet, or is everything due to confounding. Comorbidities, renal disease, for example, has been related with lower risk of prostate cancer, and this may be related with lower testosterone levels. And for diet, there is a suggestion that a high intake of dairy products, which in turn are associated with higher concentrations of insulin growth factor 1, may be related with a higher risk. But these associations have not been, they are not well established yet. And something very important on prostate cancer, when we look at the epidemiology of prostate cancer, is to look at tumor characteristics. This is crucial because of what I told you about the problem we have with detection bias. And we usually use a stage and grade. So a stage means how far the tumor has spread. So a localized stage will mean that the cancer is located within the prostate capsule. And an advanced stage means that the cancer is spreading outside the prostate. And then we also use a lot of the grade of the tumor. So when a patient has a biopsy, this is looked at in the lab. And what you have there is how differentiated the tumor is. So the more differentiated, the more abnormal the cells look like compared to normal cells. And we consider that when a tumor is very undifferentiated, it's more aggressive because it looks very abnormal compared to normal cells. So these are the differentiations that I will show you in some of the slides later. We look at, when we talk about aggressive disease, we usually consider advanced stage, high grade, and dying from prostate cancer. Prostate cancer as the underlying cause of death. And what is the incidence of prostate cancer? Well, here you have the incidence of cancer worldwide. This is total cancer. And here you have prostate cancer. So if we compare the two slides, you can see that the incidence rates are a bit lower in Canada compared for prostate cancer compared to the global rates. But it's a very, very incident cancer worldwide. And since we see variations in different locations, this tells us that their lifestyle factors and environment may be playing a role in the development of prostate cancer. There is evidence from migration studies, men, for example, from Asia that have moved to the US, in which we can see a change in risk. So it's not only about genetics, there can be some environmental and lifestyle factors involved in the etiology of prostate cancer. This data comes also from the International Agency for Research on Cancer, as the one I saw before, and it shows that prostate cancer is the second most incident cancer in men. But if you see the mortality is not that high. Although if you take into account how many cases are diagnosed and how prevalent it is, at the end it kills a lot of men every year. And here we have the figures for men, that obviously we don't have prostate here, but you can see that breast cancer has a similar picture to prostate in terms of incidence. It's a very incident cancer, but the mortality is quite low compared with other cancers such as stomach, for example, or pancreatic cancer of esophagus, which are very lethal. And here we have while worldwide, prostate cancer was the second most common cancer in men, in the UK is the most incident one. And 26% of all the cancers that are diagnosed in men in the UK are from the prostate. And here we have the picture for women. It's a very similar picture again for breast cancer to those for women that what we see for prostate cancer in men. And in this slide from Cancer Research UK, we can see the 20 most common causes of cancer death in 2015. And prostate is the fourth one. So lung cancer is the cancer site that have killed more people in the population in this country in cancer, followed by colorectal, breast, and prostate. And breast and prostate, as you can see, they are very close. So let's talk about obesity and prostate cancer. What do we know about it? Well, as you know, obesity has highly increased during the last year in this country and worldwide. And this is data showing how it has increased from the 90s until 2010. And you can see that the increase is the mean of BMI in the population now is considered that is overweight, what is quite bad. And here we have this. I really like the diagrams from Cancer Research UK because I think they are very visual and it really helps to see what, to translate the science into something more visual and more easy for the people to understand. So what we know nowadays is that obesity is related with at least 13 different types of cancer. It's highly related with colorectal and breast and esophagus cancer, as you can see. But the association with other cancer sites is less clear and is not as strong. But there is enough evidence to say that obesity causes cancer, and nowadays is considered by the International Agency for Research of Cancer a cause of multiple cancer sites. This is a paper that was published in the New England 4 years ago now, what time flies. And here they did a meta-analysis looking at different cancer sites in relation to BMI. And for prostate cancer, as you can see in the bottom, the conclusion was that the association and the evidence was very limited to conclude that there was an association. For other cancer sites, there was sufficient evidence to say that it increased the risk of that determined cancer. But for prostate cancer, it's unclear. And the World Cancer Research Fund, who does a meta-analysis from prospective studies on the association between lifestyle factors, and it also includes height and cancer, they included that obesity was a probably cause of advance of aggressive prostate cancer, but as you can see here, it's included in the probable box. It's not included in the convincing one. So definitely, we need more research to know whether there is something going on here or not. And we have assessed this association in two different cohorts, in EPIC, that is the European Prospective Investigation into Cancer and Nutrition, in UK Biobank. And then in this collaborative group, large name of this collaborative group that we have in our unit on prostate cancer, we have looked at the association between different hormones and growth factors with BMI. But we have not assessed properly the association of BMI with risk of prostate cancer. So in EPIC, as you may remember from my talk a month ago, EPIC is a European cohort. 10 European countries are included here. It started in the 90s. There are two countries that don't have men. So for prostate cancer analysis, we include 8 of the countries. And it recruited 500,000 people. And since recruitment, we always exclude the cancer cases when they enter the study to do any analysis we do to eliminate reverse causality. And since recruitment, a total of 7,000 prostate cancer cases have been diagnosed in this cohort. It's one of the largest worldwide. Of these 7,000 prostate cancer cases, 1,300 are advanced stage. If you remember what I said about the stage is that the tumor has spread outside the prostate. 600 are high grade, and this meant that the cells are very different compared to normal cells, so it's an aggressive tumor. And there has been 900 deaths from prostate cancer. Prostate cancer has been the underlying cause of death of 900 people in this cohort. And here we have the findings. I'm gonna go through this very slowly because there are a lot of numbers here. So in the top, we have the association between BMI and total prostate cancer without differentiating by stage and grade of the disease. And we found that those who have, so we divided BMI in fifths, okay? So those in the highest fifth, I don't know if I have a pointer. Is there a pointer here? Well, probably is enough, but probably you can see with that. Those in the highest fifth have a lower risk of being diagnosed with prostate cancer. This may be surprising, isn't it? We have been talking all the time before about obesity increasing the risk of prostate cancer and why we are seeing here a lower risk. Well, the truth is that this is the paradox we are seeing between obesity and prostate cancer. It's actually related in all the cohorts out there with a lower risk of being diagnosed with the disease. However, it's related with a higher risk of aggressive tumors. And what may be behind this? Well, it actually may reflect the detection bias. So men who are obese, who have obesity, may be less likely to go to the medical doctor and have a PSA test, for example. So we usually are very careful when we do analysis on total prostate cancer because they can be hugely biased by detection bias because of this. And this is a clear example. Moreover, men with obesity have bigger prostates, and when you do a biopsy, you may not pick the tumor. It's less likely for you to pick where the tumor is. And another problem is that men with obesity have lower concentrations of PSA test in the blood. So if they actually go to the medical doctor and have a PSA test, their values may not be very high because they are obese. So the PSA is like diluted in men with obesity. So all this may reflect detection bias. However, when we look at a stage and grade of the disease, we found heterogeneity, significant heterogeneity by grade. This means that the association goes in opposite direction for low and intermediate grade and high grade. And while we see a lower risk of low grade tumors, we see a higher risk of high grade prostate cancer. So there is a 32% higher risk of being diagnosed with prostate cancer if men have higher BMI. And for waist circumference, we saw a very similar picture. We found again that those that have higher waist circumference have a lower risk of being diagnosed with total prostate cancer, but they have a higher risk of being diagnosed with high-grade prostate cancer. And the association is actually stronger for waist circumference and for BMI, and this may show that fat located around the waist is actually what is behind this instead of total adiposity, although we are seeing an association with total adiposity too. And you can see here that we didn't find a heterogeneity by stage of the disease. So for example, here or here, the association for a stage was not significant. And we also looked in this study at prostate cancer death, and we found a very similar picture for BMI and waist circumference. Those men that have higher BMI and higher waist circumference have a higher risk of dying from prostate cancer. And the association, again, is stronger for waist circumference than for BMI. And we wanted to also assess this association in the UK Biobank cohort. UK Biobank, I don't know if you have heard of it, maybe you have, it's a cohort of 500,000 men and women from the UK. They were aged between 40 and 69 years when they were recruited. And they were recruited in England, Scotland, and Wales. A total of 22 centers that are, you can see them in the picture, were included. And a lot of information was collected at baseline. So the participants had the blood taken. They also provided a spot of urine sample. There were a lot of questionnaires about lifestyle and environmental factors, personal and family history. There was also a nurse that took physical measurements. And something quite unique of this court is that it has bioimpedance in the whole court, and that's available, that gives us information of fat, total body fat, because actually, as you may know, BMI and waist circumference are proxies for body fat. Actually, obesity is defined as excessive fat accumulation, but BMI and waist circumference are not properly measuring fat mass. And this court has information on fat mass in the whole court, what is great. And the participants gave their consent at recruitment for their health records to be followed up. So they have a link with hospitalization records and cancer registries and death registries. And we have information to, for example, they have developed prostate cancer during the follow-up period. And what we found here in this court is a very similar association of what we found in EPIC. So we have BMI in the top, followed by body fat in percentage, and the categories, as you can see, have been predefined. Here has not been they have not been divided by fifths. And in the bottom, you have waist circumference. And we can see that the stronger association is for BMI, it's even stronger than for body fat. And those men that have higher BMI have a lower risk of being diagnosed with prostate cancer. So if the dots are in the left side of the plot, it means that there is a lower risk. So they actually have a 25% lower risk of being diagnosed with the disease. And we see very similar picture for body fat and for waist circumference. However, in this court, we don't have information of stage and grade yet. It has not been released by UK Biobank. They have so much data they have to work with and they have to release to the researchers that this has not been a priority to date, but we are really looking forward to have this information, because as I have already told you, all these results may be actually biased by detection. And we really need a stage and grade information to be able to answer this association reliably. Moreover, another limitation that these results have is that we have a very short follow-up, so only 5 years. And because of this short follow-up, we have not been able to look at prostate cancer death yet, because not many men have died from prostate cancer. So we need both stage and grade data and a longer follow-up to be able to look at this association reliably in this court. And now let's move to the collaborative group on prostate cancer. So this is the picture that we took 2 years ago. We invited all the collaborators to come here to Oxford. This collaborative group started early in 2000 and is led by Professor Tim Key and Naomi Allen. And the aim was to pull all the data over the world on biomarkers, nutritional biomarkers and endogenous hormones, and prostate cancer. The criteria is that they have to be prospective. So this means that the cancer diagnosis has to be after they enter the court. And they are usually nested case control studies within the whole court. And this means that the cases and controls have been selected, because it's very, very expensive to analyze in the lab a determined biomarker. So you cannot do it in $500,000. Well, UK Biobank has done it because they have a lot of money, but it's the only court that have actually do it in $500,000 people. And usually courts have, for example, like 1,000 cases, and 1,000 match controls that have been matched, for example, in terms if they are from the same center, same age, and have some similarities. And what we have done, we have pulled off this data, we contacted the collaborators, we asked them to send us the data, and we have centralized all the data here, used the same confounders for the statistical models, and reanalyzed everything again. This highly increased the power you have to find an association, and is more reliable because also we are using the same confounders and the same criteria for all the cohorts. And currently we have over 40 studies worldwide that are collaborating with us. So some of the results from this collaborative group are this, for example, Ruth Travis published 3 years ago that insulin growth factor 1 was associated with, so if you look down there, it says per 80 percentile increase, this is the linear scale, so it was associated with 22% higher risk of prostate cancer. This is all prospective data. This is one of the most important findings that we have been able to answer with this collaborative group, because an individual study is usually not powered enough to be able to look at this. And that's why an international collaboration is so important. And the power of the international collaboration is really shown in this slide, because very low concentrations of testosterone are associated with a lower risk of being diagnosed with prostate cancer. And because of the high number of cases in this collaborative group, we are able to divide our population in tens instead of fifths, for example, and this allows us to look at very low concentrations of testosterone, what we have not been able to look before. This was published by Ellie Watts, one of our PhD students that have recently been graduated, and it was one of the most important findings that we have on prostate cancer. And in relation to this, Ellie wanted, now Dr. Watts already, she wanted to look at the cross-sectional associations between sex hormones, mainly we are mainly interested on testosterone because of the association I have shown you, and IGFs with BMI. For this, she calculated geometric mean concentrations of the biomarkers by categories of BMI, our exposure, and she adjusted the model by study, because we have so many studies, we really need to adjust for the fact that they are different and age. And we did these cross-sectional associations in controls only. The reason for doing it in control only, because we didn't want because the biomarker levels may be affected because of the tumor, so we didn't want that to affect the cross-sectional association with BMI. That's why we do this analysis only in the controls. And she included a total of 10 sex hormones, 25 studies, and this included over 12,000 men. And for IGFs, we included 2 IGFs, 3 binding proteins, and 22 studies that added up to 16,000 men. And here we have the results. There were other associations, but for us, one of the most important ones was this one with free testosterone. So men who have a higher BMI have a lower testosterone concentrations. And this may be because increasing the adipose tissue also leads to higher activity of these hormones there, the aromatase. So this causes that testosterone is converted to estradiol, and this decreases the concentration in the blood of men with obesity. And actually, the association that we are seeing with obesity may be mediated by this. And we also found some associations with IGF For IGF-1, you can see the association is a little bit U-shaped, so it's not that linear. But with the binding proteins, with IGF-1 binding protein and with IGF-2 binding protein, the association is kind of more linear. And this is because more circulating insulin, we know that men with obesity have higher insulin concentrations. This may cause a reduction in the binding proteins. And the lower the amount of binding proteins, the higher free IGF is in the circulation, because the IGF is not binding to the binding protein. And this means that if there is more free IGF, it's more likely that this IGF can go into the prostate and can lead to, can increase the risk of prostate cancer. So what other mechanisms may be out there to explain the association between obesity and prostate cancer? We have already looked at IGF and testosterone, but there are other things, like for example adipokines and other factors within the IGF axis that may influence this, and we really need more research to try to know what's going on. And as I have mentioned, the big challenge we have in epidemiological research on obesity and prostate cancer is try to know whether the associations we are seeing are actually causal or are all detection bias. Because it may be all detection bias, because men who, as I told you, men who have obesity are less likely to be diagnosed. And this may also lead that if they are diagnosed at a later stage, it's more likely that the tumor has progressed and has not been diagnosed on time. So probably the association we are seeing with a higher risk of aggressive tumors may also mean all detection bias. But there is a hypothesis, as I have told you already, that actually there can be some mechanisms mediating the association, and the association may be causal. But we need more research. And what is the future work we are gonna do? I recently got a fellowship from Cancer Research UK to look at this in more detail. And I don't know if you have heard about Mendelian randomization. Have you? Yes? Okay. So I'm gonna use Mendelian randomization to try to answer whether the association is causal.
And maybe explain what it is.
Yeah, so it uses instrumental variable. It uses variation in genes that are associated with the adiposity measurements to try to explain whether the association is causal, because genes are not affected by lifestyle factors and by confounders. They are what they are, and you cannot affect them. So it uses the genes to try to explain whether the association of lifestyle factors with a determined disease is causal or not. And how you do this, first you do, it's called a GWAS, so you relate first all your genes with a lifestyle factor of interest, so in this case will be total adiposity and fat distribution, so if the fat is located around the waist or if it's subcutaneous, and we identify genes that are markers for this. And then we go to a separate database, very big database, because we need a very big number of cases. For this, I will use the Practical Consortia that has over 40,000 prostate cancer cases. And we look at the association of that genes with the risk of prostate cancer. So this is what I'm gonna, this is part of the project that I'm gonna do. I'm gonna specifically look at identify instrumental variable genes that are associated with visceral fat as subcutaneous fat. And I will also look into some mediators. So I have already started a project to determine C-peptide concentrations, that is a marker of insulin in the blood, but it's more stable than insulin. So I'm determining now C-peptide concentrations in 1,000 aggressive prostate cancer cases. And this data will be pooled with all the data we have in the collaborative group on prostate cancer to assess whether they relate with risk. And I will also use Mendelian randomization using genes that are related with these blood markers to try to see whether the association is causal. And yeah, finally, I would like to thank my team here in Oxford, Tim Key and Ruth Travis especially, and our collaborators in the Prostate Cancer Collaborative Group and in the EPIC cohort. And that's all. Well, thank you very much. And please, if you have any doubt, please ask.